Good afternoon. Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are people that are helping change things on the planet, helping us grow in our consciousness as a human species. And my Paradigm Shifter today is Gay Hendricks. Welcome, Gay.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
Me too. Gay just finished writing a book. Well, actually, Gay's got a long history of consciousness work in the world, mostly starting off with consciousness in relationships, right?
Yes. One of our first big books was Conscious Loving that my wife and I wrote about 15 years ago. So that's probably the book we're best known for.
And you have a relationship institute, don't you?
Yes. Kathleen and I, for pretty much all of the 28 years we've been together, have done some form of teaching, either teaching professionals or teaching seminars for the public, and we still do that. We train about 1,000 professionals a year through our institute and also do a lot of workshops and seminars around the countryside for folks who are interested in improving their relationships and having more body-mind vibrance.
Wonderful. Well, of course, we all need that, don't we?
Absolutely, especially in these days.
Yeah, I was talking a little bit on the difficulty of relationships just before this show, but we'll get into that later. The other thing is that this is an interview about your latest book, which is called Five Wishes.
Yes, Five Wishes, and the subtitle is How Answering One Simple Question Can Make All of Your Dreams Come True.
Well, sounds good. We'll take it. I was just thinking that it's sort of like so many people have dissed the secret, saying mostly my complaint has been because they didn't go in deeply about how we create our reality from a subconscious place and so on. And it seems like your book has addressed that really well. So I'm going to say the book is a lot about manifestation, but it's a different style, and it takes one into the authenticity of one's journey, doesn't it?
Yes. I think that one of the complaints that people had about The Secret is that it focused on one secret, but there are a lot of other deeper things that people really need to know to make manifestation work for them. And one of the main reasons I wrote Five Wishes was because I really wanted to show people how the very deepest things can be expressed very simply. And so I tried to write it in such a way that it's short. You know, my goal was to write a book that people could read on an airplane between Los Angeles and San Francisco.
That's exactly when I read it.
Oh, good.
Oakland, actually.
Uh-huh. Well, good. Well, I'm very proud of it because I started out a much longer book, and I kept trimming it down until I found that there were no other words I could possibly cut out of it. And so,
I felt like it's an easy read, but it packs a wallop.
Yeah, well, that's the original conversation that inspired me to write the book packed such a wallop in my life and changed my life so much that I wanted to have everybody have the opportunity to have that conversation with themselves.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that, or do you want everybody to read the book?
Well, I'd like everybody to read the book, but I'd like to tell you about it, too. I hope that telling the book won't give away all the punchlines, but what happened for me was in an earlier stage of my life, before I had any relationships that worked very well, and I just didn't seem to have much of a life purpose that I could put my finger on. I went to a party that I didn't even really want to go to, and I went to it pretty much because Kathleen, I was just beginning to see her. We were in an early stage of our relationship, and she wanted to go to the party because she was new in town and wanted to meet people and so forth. And the reason I didn't want to go to the party, it was to celebrate the upcoming fifth marriage of a man that I'd known, a colleague of mine, another psychologist, and I'd known him through marriages 2, 3, and 4, and I was convinced that number 5 was not probably going to turn out any better. And so I felt a little hypocritical going to celebrate it. But anyway, we went to the party, and I kind of wandered off into a side room, which was the library of the house, and I was browsing through books, just having a little quiet time. And another fellow came into the room who was about 60, and he was a bald fellow, tall, bald fellow. And we struck up a conversation, and it turned out that he had had a near-death experience, and he was also a astrologer and spiritual teacher. I didn't know that at the time, but we agreed that we didn't want to have any small talk, so he said, well, how about some big talk? And I said, okay. And he said, well, if you were on your deathbed and looking back over your life, and if I came to visit and I said, was your life a success, would you say yes or no? And I kind of gulped, you know, I was kind of a question that came so far out of left field that I couldn't help, though, but answer it. And so I said, well, to be honest, if it were tonight, looking back over my life, I'd have to say my life was not a success, because even though I've, you know, had material success and written a couple of books and had some worldly success, I really don't think my life is a success because I haven't ever experienced lasting love. I haven't experienced a relationship with a woman that lasted over time, that really developed anything. And he said, well, why do you think that's true? Why do you think you haven't had that? You know, he said, you're a fairly smart, good-looking fellow. Why do you think you haven't had any relationships that have really worked? And when I started to tell him, I found that I was talking kind of superficially in a way. I said, well, you know, I need my freedom. I need my space. I don't like to be crowded, and I don't like to be, have to answer to anybody else. And he kind of saw right through that, and he said, well, that sounds like kind of BS. What are you really afraid of? And I said, well, I think what I'm really afraid of is that I'll let somebody get close to me, and then they'll leave me. And I don't want to experience that kind of pain. And it kind of jumped out of my mouth. I'd never even said that before or even thought about that being the problem before. But as soon as I said it, it had a certain ring of truth to it. And it really made a huge impact on my relationships because when I was driving home that night, I said to Kathleen, hey, you know why I've never had relationships that lasted? And she said, well, you know, you've always said it was because you need your freedom and that kind of thing. And I said, no, I just learned tonight that that's a lot of BS. I said that I think the real reason is if I let you get close to me, you might leave me. And her mouth kind of dropped open, and she said, my gosh, you know. And she said, I don't have any intentions of doing that, so let's give it a try, you know. Let's see what happens. And so I decided to start letting people in, and pretty much everything changed in my life after that point. You know, they say the longest journey is the 12-inch journey from your head to your heart, and mm-hmm. I think I made that journey that night, and I really have felt like a completely different person ever since.
Hmm. That's a wonderful story. Well, also, you had reasons when you were young. You and your mom had some difficulty.
I think the basic tracks for the whole abandonment thing had gotten laid down very early in my life because my mother, when I was born, my father had just died when she was still pregnant with me, and so she was having this devastating loss she was trying to cope with, and I had an older brother, so she was suddenly left penniless and, you know, a son to raise and a new one just about to be born. And
traumatized.
And very traumatized by that, too, because my dad was only 32 years old. And
oh, my.
So it was a big, devastating thing, and my mother, you know, I think she kind of lost it for a while there, and so I was raised in my early days by my grandmother, who stepped in and helped out, and so I think I had that feeling of loss or abandonment right away in my life and didn't even know it. You know, those things that happen so early in life, they kind of get filed away back in some part of your mind that isn't easy to access. But
well, that could even be in the womb in your case.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, you know, I think I came to expect abandonment, and if I got close to somebody, and so my solution to that was to keep them at arm's length so it wouldn't hurt if they left me. And, you know, that's the kind of solution the unconscious mind comes up with. You know, it's kind of a short-term solution, but then later on in life,
it can be a long-term solution.
Yeah, yeah,
careful,
it
right?
Sticks around longer than it needs to.
Right. So it seemed to me when I was reading the book, the thing I really loved is that, well, I really enjoyed the read, actually. It's a wonderful, I tell everybody at home, it's a great little book to read because it stimulated so much in me. And I'm always fascinated by how deep these reactions are and how they propel themselves through our life or through us through our lives. And you seem to, when you were asking those questions of yourself, especially the way you were writing about it, you really took me down to those deep unhooking places. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm really glad to hear you say that. That's what I attempted to do. And
we did it in a light way, which is really a wonderful coup, I'd say.
Well, thank you. I really believe that personal growth and change ought to be fun. You know, it ought to be exhilarating. It doesn't have to be, even if you're going through deeply sad stuff or stuff you're scared about or angry about, it's okay to do that in a way that still allows you to have fun with it and to be with it in a light way. One of the things I learned early on was that a sense of humor can pretty much get you through anything. And I make that a central part of my work.
Well, I didn't find the book hilarious, okay?
Well, it wasn't intended to be hilarious. Maybe next one.
However, I really liked, brought up the abandonment. It could have come from the womb. I liked the way you wrote it. It was so much like everything can be reversed if we really let ourselves take charge of it. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, yes, to take responsibility for it, to step into the driver's seat. And I think one of the things I try to point out in the book, too, is the power of commitment. You know, I realized in that first conversation I had with that man, Ed, at the party, that one of the reasons I had never had a close relationship also was that I had never really made a commitment to doing that. And so in a close relationship, I would get into a relationship and I, you know, my body would be there, but one foot would be out the side door, you know, and so I wasn't really in the room. And, you know, to use a sports analogy, I was pretending to be on the field when I was still sitting back on the bench. And so women would point this out to me. You know, even I remember my first girlfriend in high school. And throughout part of college, her name was Alice, and you know, she pointed out very kindly to me on a number of occasions that she didn't feel I was really there, you know, present. And of course, I would self-righteously defend myself about that, like many people do. You know, what do you mean? Of course, I'm here. I'm here, aren't I? And that kind of thing. But you know, I came to see the wisdom of what she was really saying. But years later, to really understand that. A part of me was there, but kind of the spiritual part of me was elsewhere.
Well, a lot of us have been thinking lately about how much, you know, our beliefs and our structuring of our defenses and so on prevent that flow of our whole self, don't they? And the way you ask those questions seem to release a lot of the whole self. Like, do you still use those? Well, maybe you want to give an example of the question. Do you? Do you want to put people through it?
Sure, I'd love to. So transport yourself in your imagination to the end of your life. And, you know, that might be 50 years from now or it might be tomorrow. We never know. But just in your imagination, to get a different perspective, transport yourself to the end of your life and look back over your whole life. And imagine me or someone you care about comes to you at that point and says, was your life a success? And if you said yes, what is the one thing that really made it a success? If you had to pick one thing that really made your life a success, what was that one thing? And if you said no, what was that one thing that you missed out on doing or didn't experience, that if you had experienced it, your life would be a success? And focus on the one thing first. Now, for me, as I mentioned, when I really considered that, I realized that my one thing was that I had never experienced a lasting love relationship with a woman that grew over time. For you, it might be something completely different. Everyone has a little bit different slant on life. And so if you focus on that one thing first, what would that one thing be? Then what would a second thing be? If your life was a success, what would a second thing be that you really accomplished or experienced that made your life feel like a success? And if your life were not a success, what would that second thing be that you hadn't ever allowed yourself to experience or accomplish? So that's really the process. The process is shifting your perspective to the end of your life, looking back over your life, and to find out first what that one thing is that really made your life a success. If you've experienced it, great. Go on to number two. In my case, I hadn't experienced that thing yet, and I came up with five wishes that were based on five things that I had not experienced, that I thought if I did experience those things, my life would be fulfilled. That first one was to create a loving relationship with a woman. My second one was what I called completion, or writing from the heart was another one of my top ones. Both of those have a relationship to each other because they both involve going down inside myself and finding what's really real. Like in learning how to write from my heart, at the time I mostly wrote textbooks and things like that and scientific articles, but I wanted to learn how to say what was really true for me. And that involved a kind of a going down inside myself process. And same thing with one of my other main top wishes was for what I called completion, like not leaving anything unsaid or unlistened to in my relationships with people. I had a bad habit back then of not saying things that were important to me to other people. You know, they could be very positive things, like there were certain people I hadn't told them how much I cared and loved about them. I just never spoken that to them. And I realized I didn't want to live that way any longer. I wanted to live in a state of completion where I could say everything that was on my mind, and I could listen to anything that another person had to say. I didn't block out anything.
Did that work? It
worked amazingly well, and it took me, gosh, probably the better part of a year, maybe even longer, to do a lot of those completions. You know, like little things, like I remembered that I owed and had owed for many years a person a kind of a small amount of money, $160. But the reason I hadn't paid him back, and the reason I'd forgotten all about it, was I'd gotten angry at him about a work-related thing. He was my boss at one point back in 1968, and I'd gotten angry about him and had moved on to a different job. And I used the excuse up in my mind, I think, that because I was mad at him, I didn't have to repay him the money. You know, that's the kind of justifying our little minds will do.
It's a vengeance, right?
Yeah. And I had to do some detective work and track him down, and I finally caught up with him. He was, things had changed in his life, and things weren't going very well. And when I had known him, he was fairly well off, drove a Cadillac, etc. And by the time I caught up with him, he was living in a small room, you know, things hadn't gone very well. And I got this incredible letter from him afterwards that said, you know, that not only had he been able to use the money, I mean, he was thanking me for sending the money, but he said that it had kind of restored his faith in a way in human beings. He was feeling kind of down on human beings, and to have somebody track him down and pay him money from ages ago, you know, he'd completely forgotten about it too.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it was a powerful thing because I got a chance to really make a contribution to somebody's life at the same time to my own. Because there's nothing like the power of completion. I mean, really, you complete something like that, and there's this burst of energy.
Wow.
You know? And
well, tell me this. Did you have any difficult ones that you wanted to go back because of unfinished business or angers or judgments or so on?
Yes, I had a remarkable one, as a matter of fact, with my former wife at the time, whom I hadn't seen in quite a number of years, and I actually drove across the country and making some of these completions with people, and I had to drive all the way to New England from California for her, and we went out and had lunch, and I told her a whole bunch of difficult things, you know, things that I was angry at her about, and a one-night stand I'd had that I'd never told her about, and when I was out of town at a conference, and so, you know, little things like that that would have made a difference in our relationship, probably. I don't think it would have ultimately, you know, saved our relationship. It was pretty much doomed anyway, but just things that once I shared them with her, you know, it freed my mind up, and she was grateful for it, too. And here's a very interesting thing. I got a call from her last week, and I probably haven't seen her in, 20 years or more. And I got a call from her, and she had been at a Barnes & Noble bookshop and had seen my book and just sat down in the cafe and started reading it and had come across these three sentences that were about her. And so she was calling up to tell me kind of reconnect with me. It was a really interesting conversation. And she's still living in the same place back there. And I had a chance to, you know, talk to her and find out what her life is like and that kind of thing. So it made for a very interesting connection.
Oh, that's wonderful. Did you have any that rejected this idea?
Yeah, I did. I had a couple of people that told me basically, I don't want to go there. You know, I don't want to resurrect that kind of stuff. You know, I don't want to go back into the past. And you have to respect that, I think. You know, I've had a couple of family members that were not interested in those kind of conversations.
And that's exactly what I'm thinking about right now. It's like, so how did you feel? Do you feel completed? Did you get a surge of energy even though they don't want any part of it?
I found that the important thing is completing it from my end. You know, that's what gives the energy. I think it's nice if it's well received or the person thanks you or whatever, but that's not going to happen all the time. And in a few cases, the people were dead, and so I needed to find some other way to deal with it. One way was by visiting the person's grave and just communicating with them standing there. I did that on a couple of occasions and also kind of wrote letters to a couple of people that were already dead, but just kind of wrote them a letter as if they were still alive.
Mm. And that worked for you? That helped?
Yeah, I think any time you connect with the authentic feelings that are down in there, you know, there aren't that many feelings that you really have to communicate to people. You know, there's people that you haven't told something that you're angry with them about or hanging on to anger, and there are people that you feel some sadness about. And then there were people that I felt love and affection and gratitude for that I hadn't told them that.
Yeah,
you know, like a couple of important family connections that I hadn't said to them, I want you to know how much I love and appreciate your contribution to me.
Wow. And how was that accepted?
Very well, yeah. And
that's probably a little more, I think a lot of us, I'm just curious about this part about people being angry, because a lot of people want to know how to deal with that spiritually or to release so that there's no more karma, so you can be complete. And that completion is often very awkward for us, isn't it?
Yes, I think so. Well, you know, we have to give ourselves a lot of compassion because, after all, most of us haven't had any training in how to do things like that, you know. I wish we'd spent 10 minutes a day in school, you know, in the first grade, second grade, talking about the difference between anger and fear and sadness and how to communicate those things. And but it's very,
and how to respect them in other people.
Yeah.
Instead of developing the defenses. It's very interesting. I love that you did that.
One thing I learned is that almost every time that I'm angry at somebody, if I look underneath that, I'm really actually scared about something. You know, like if I'm angry about something, it sometimes boils down more likely to something I'm scared about, like I'm scared they're not going to like me, or I'm scared they're going to leave me, or something like that. So I learned to kind of look underneath my anger. I mean, there are some things that are just pure anger that aren't associated with fear and sadness, but I found that 9 times out of 10, for me anyway, I have to look underneath my anger to see what there's down there that I'm really frightened about.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I'm always encouraging people to look for what's really underneath it, and myself as well. I think the other thing is just how to then unhook. You know, just to leave things unfinished is so heart-sinking for a lot of people, isn't it?
Well, I think it's also, yes, it's heart-sinking, and it also makes you sick. I mean, look,
that's the truth. Yeah.
Freud said at the end of his life, somebody asked him to summarize his entire work in one sentence, and he said, "Secrets make you sick." The idea that not communicating the things that are important that live down inside you is what contributes to a lot of illness. And I can, you know, I remember one time particularly, I don't remember if I wrote about this in this book, but I actually disappeared the flu out of my body by suddenly realizing that I was sick because I hadn't communicated something important and true to the woman I was with at the time.
Hmm.
This was back in the 70s. I remember
before
exactly.
You wrote your book, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was actually probably even before that.
Hmm.
I felt like I was coming down with the flu, and I kept feeling worse and worse and worse. And then I realized that maybe I was making myself sick because I hadn't communicated an important thing to the person, and the important thing was really important, which was I no longer loved her and I no longer wanted to be in the relationship.
So it was easier to get sick in a way.
Yeah, it gave me a good excuse not to say anything about it. And
so what'd you do, Gay?
I pulled off the road and went to a phone booth, and this is like it happened yesterday.
Hmm.
I drove off the road. I was heading down to Big Sur, and I drove off the road and pulled up to a phone booth, and there was another person in there. It was pouring rain, and there was another person, and he would not get off the phone. And I stood out there for like 15 minutes, you know, kind of jumping from foot to foot and kept waving at him, you know, and he kept kind of shushing me, you know, like, go away, go away. And so I got back in my car and drove on down the road, and there was not another phone booth probably for an hour or so. It was, you know, kind of a lonely stretch of road. But I finally found this other phone booth, and I pulled in and called the woman and told her back in Colorado where she was. And we had a kind of a good cry and talked to each other and ended up having quite a wonderful conversation for probably 30 minutes or so. And when I got back in my car, no flu symptoms whatsoever. They had disappeared.
It's a homeopathic remedy.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that there's a lot of health benefits. Well, I can just tell you that I haven't had a cold now in 12 years, I think. 12 years. I think it was 1995 I had my last cold.
Hmm.
And so I think there's a lot of health benefits to staying in the present and staying in a state of completion so you don't let things build up in your body.
I love that. So I'm going to go back to this other part, which is if somebody is really mad at you and there's been a disagreement or you've been dissed and you really, it's still good to collect your wits and become fairly conscious, but also say something out loud. Would you recommend that?
Yeah, I think it's very, very important to do that.
Even if they don't want that, and if they say, I don't go into that sort of thing.
Well, if they stonewall you, I don't think you should beat them over the head with a blunt object of the truth.
This is good.
But, you know, if the person doesn't want to have anything to do with you or doesn't want to talk to you about it, then I think the next step would be to talk to a third party about it, you know, trying to describe it to the to another person, to a coach or friend or therapist or whatever, and to talk about it that way.
And get it out of your body.
Yeah, just kind of move it on through, or journal about it. Mm-hmm. There's great research by James Pennebaker, a psychologist down at Southern Methodist University, where he has people journal about important emotional things. And one of the studies I read, which was really remarkable, was that he had people journal for about an hour a week about important emotional things in their life, and you know, hundreds of people, and he found that the journalers had statistically less visits to the student health center over the winter than people who didn't do that, people that were in the control group.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like the controlled group.
Yeah.
So you're right, just get it out. That's what you're saying, is work it out. I find journaling, I often get answers for my own difficulties anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah. I do a lot of that myself, and also do a lot of I like to jot myself little notes, you know, like if I'm out in my car or doing errands or something, and I think of something that I haven't said to somebody, something important, I keep a little pad in my pocket and jot those things down. I probably jotted down two or three of them today, as a matter of fact. And, my wife is always finding little notes stuffed in my pocket and that say things like, talk to Stephen or tell Stephen about something or other. You know, it's just things that if I don't communicate about them, I know they're just going to clog me up.
Well, I think also I like to work on the journey of the soul, and I'm thinking it does give a way to vent things instead of just running karma or cellular connection over and over again, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
One of the things I loved about, and I can't remember which section of the book, but you were talking about, might have been anger, but I just felt this really deep place that I went into reading the book where you unhooked what I would have considered to be deep subconscious material by recreating. You seem to recreate what it is you wanted instead of putting up with what was missing. And then it looked like it really had such an impact. I can't remember which page it is, and I'll flip through my book while we talk. So you have to talk now so I get to flip through the book.
Thank you. Well, I'm always delighted to talk about this. One of the things that the book is really about is how to turn the things that you think are negative into positives by figuring out what the wish would be that, if you had it, would replace the missing thing. Like, instead of going around despairing because I wasn't feeling complete with certain people, just to go ahead and put that out there as a wish, you know, to say, okay, my wish for myself is to live in a state of completion where nothing is unsaid, nothing's unlistened to. And once you have that wish out there, most of us have a good body sense of how to make a wish, because we've made a wish and blown out a birthday candle sometime in our life. Many of us have, anyway.
Some and, of us more than others, right?
Yeah, I've blown out quite a few now.
Me too.
And so we have that body association with making a wish and then, whoosh, you know, blowing out the candles. And so that's why I think that the important thing is to list your wishes and then turn them into living affirmations and try them on as if there's something in the present. You know, like instead of saying, I want to live in a state of completion, just go ahead and try that on, just like you'd try on a new shirt or a new blouse or something in a store. Just slip it on and say, okay, I live in a state of completion where there's nothing unsaid, nothing unlistened to with other people. Or, I write from my heart. I write about things that are true and real for me. You know, to put them in the present like that gives you a right now sense of that being so for you.
Mm-hmm. That's really, it's just wonderful the way you do it. So I really recommend the book to people.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm very, you know, I feel blessed that I was able to make all of my wishes come true in my life. That's why I want more than anything else for everyone who reads the book, is that I'd like to live in a world where more and more people are making their wishes and dreams come true.
That's a whole paradigm shift, and that's what you're teaching us, right? How to shift this paradigm.
Absolutely, how to shift this paradigm.
Now tell me this, do you have more wishes coming up? I mean, this isn't the end for you. You got a long time to go yet.
Oh, yeah, I got a long time to go. Well, in the book, some of the wishes, like my fifth wish, is called savoring life. And what that's about is that I want to be present for all the moments of my life. I want to be right here. I want to be where I can savor and really enjoy every moment. And that wish is a wish that's coming true all of the time. I hope it's never going to stop coming true. You know, it's a wish that will grow every day as I learn more and more to savor life. So several of my wishes are ongoing kinds of things that don't have an outcome or an end point to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a good idea, by the way, too, when you list your wishes, to make sure at least some of them are things that you'll still be working on and opening up to throughout your full life.
Like completion, for example, you'll always be completing. That's a goal that you set up on your daily routine, right?
Yeah, and do you remember that wonderful quote from Rilke where he said something about the poet Rainer Maria Rilke in his book, Letters to a Young Poet? He says something like, don't worry so much about the answers. Learn to live in the questions. And if you learn to live in your questions, your life will become the answer to those questions. And I have found that absolutely to be true, that if you open up to certain big questions, you know, like, how can I live in a state of completion all the time? Or how can I learn to write from my heart? Or how can I learn to savor every moment of my life? That kind of a question is not something that has a right answer or a wrong answer. It's a question you live in. And
it's a style of becoming, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, that's a beautiful way to put it. It's a style of becoming. It's a way of being. And I think that those are the kinds of things that really provide a lot of the richer value in life. You know, a lot of times we get focused on questions that have a right and wrong answer and kind of cheat ourselves out of living in the big questions. And Five Wishes is really an invitation to everybody to live in those big questions and not miss out on the big questions because you got so focused on the little details of life.
The mundane, yeah. It's wonderful. I love it. I want to just shift subjects just for a moment because we have you here and you're also one of the instigators of a wonderful thing called spiritual cinema. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
Talk about wishes, eh?
Yes. Well, that's actually one of my wishes that came true. I got very interested in being in the movie world about 10 or 15 years ago. First by writing a few movie scripts, and
did they get made?
A couple of them did. The first one I wrote did not get made, but it led me to meet Stephen Simon, who became my business partner in the spiritual cinema circle.
Great.
In fact, the script got optioned by a producer and director down in Hollywood, and I went down there to a party one night where they were having a party where we were looking at a bunch of different actors and people that might be in the movie. And turned out the movie never got made. It fell through like a jillion other movies that never got made. But in the course of that evening, I struck up a conversation with Stephen Simon, who had just finished cutting the trailer for his movie, What Dreams May Come.
Hmm.
And so we kind of hit it.
Wonderful movie.
Yeah, great movie. And we hit it off and kind of started talking, and he got to be good friends with my wife and myself. And so some years later, we tried to get some positive movies made in Hollywood, but we were just not having any success. So I came up with this idea of creating a spiritual cinema circle where we would find movies that weren't making it to the theaters, you know, because there wasn't people didn't think there was an audience for inspiring movies, and we would go find them at film festivals and then send them out to people on DVD. Mm-hmm. And so we're very fortunate that it took off like a rocket, and now we have, you know, many, many thousands of members in 80 countries around the world. And so it's become a very big thing, and I'm very grateful for that, too, because it shows that it's possible to kind of invent a new way of doing things. You know, like I have old-time Hollywood movie producers calling me all the time, you know, asking my advice now, people, you know, that have, you know, produced 45 different movies. And, you know, so an outsider can kind of come in and invent something brand new, and that's quite fulfilling. Stephen invented
the secret bypassed the whole system too, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we did an end run around it, and so Stephen invented the whole genre. In other words, he coined the term spiritual cinema and wrote a book about it and that kind of thing. And
I heard that he recommended we all go into Blockbusters and ask for the spiritual cinema section.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've actually done that myself on more than one occasion, and. You know, there are some already, so I don't remember what part of the world you live in. Where do you live?
Bellingham, Washington.
Bellingham, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I remember being in a video store up in Oregon a while back that had a whole spiritual cinema section.
Excellent. So we're doing our work, eh?
We're doing our work, yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. So are you going to make any more movies?
Yes, definitely. In fact, I spent the afternoon here with Michael Gorgon, who's the gifted young director that directed the Kirk Douglas movie that we had in the spiritual cinema circle a while back called Illusion.
Oh, right. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you got to see that one. It's terrific. Michael's a very gifted young man, and he just he was working for me on another project. We just completed this week a movie for Louise Hay based on her book, You Can Heal Your Life.
Wonderful.
And that'll be coming out pretty much any day now, sometime during the month of November.
Wow.
And he also, I hired him to direct the little 17-minute movie that goes along with Five Wishes.
Yes, I wanted to see that. It didn't come with my book this time.
Yeah, well, I really hope you do, and I hope your listeners do, because after I wrote the book, I realized, wow, I'd really like to make a little movie of the original conversation in the book to bring it to life, because, you know, there's a certain number of people that learn more by watching movies and visual kinds of things than they do by reading.
Well, we're very visually oriented as a culture right now, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely. And so we created the movie, and you can actually get the movie. It goes along with the book. There's a website that... if you go to it in the mentioned in the book, you can download the movie for free.
So, excellent. Excellent.
I really encourage everybody to do that.
And you scripted the movie. Did you perform in it?
I did. I played the man that I had the conversation with.
Great.
Yeah, it was my movie debut.
Did you enjoy it?
Acting before. Never had any idea that I would ever do any acting, but we couldn't find a guy to play him, and Michael came up with the idea of having me do it, and I must say I was incredibly nervous. You know, I've been on a jillion different talk shows and, you know, and talked to 10 million people at a time on Oprah and things like that, and actually, you know, gave a lecture once in a football stadium for 50,000 people, but, you know, sitting down and having cameras running and pointing right at my face doing an act.
Staring at you.
Yeah, it was kind of nerve-wracking, but after about the 11th take, I finally got relaxed.
Do you like the movie? Is it good?
Oh, yeah, it came out 1,000 times better than I ever imagined.
Great. So now you, I want to jump around a little bit to conscious relationships. Have you done any movies on that kind of subject? Relationships are sort of the core subject of most movies, aren't they, or many movies?
Yes. In fact, the Five Wishes movie really is about relationship, because it's the two people that are featured in it, Michael and a young woman actress named Karen Graves. She plays Katie, my wife, Kathleen, in the movie, and she did a wonderful job bringing Katie to life. And it's a movie all about relationships.
And we can download it if we go to fivewishes.com?
Fivewishesbook.com.
Fivewishesbook.com.
Yeah, and it's the digit 5, the number 5, not F-I-V-E, the digit 5, fivewishesbook.com.
Okay. Well, that'd be great. It's 17 minutes, huh?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work.
Well, it was a lot of work. It took us from Friday night until Sunday night to shoot it. And
that's not too long, actually.
But it's not too long, although those were very long days. And I had 14 people in my house. We ended up using my house to shoot the movie. It turned out fine because I have a library in my house that's somewhat like the library that I was in when I had the initial conversation.
Hmm.
And we recreated a party here. We had 35 extras and had a real party going, and it was a lot of fun, actually. I mean, after it was over, it was, when I look back on it, I have very fond memories of it. There's nothing like shooting a movie scene 11 times, you know, and the first 4 or 5 didn't work, and then the next one almost worked, and then the next one almost worked, and then on take 11, suddenly the magic happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very...
it's like dropping into a reality until you can really be it.
Huh? Yeah, a reality that I hadn't even known existed, you know, since it was my first experience of that. I didn't know what was possible. You know, Michael's been in lots and lots of movies, so he had an experience of knowing what he was looking for, because he had directed other movies, and he's been an actor since he was a kid. He was in a hit TV show for several years back during the 90s called Party of Five, and that's kind of how he spent his early 20s. And I actually saw him for the first time in a Morgan Freeman movie called Hard Rain. That's where I first came across him.
Hmm. And then you asked him to join you in this adventure?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yep, now we've done several projects together and looking at some other ones, too.
Wonderful. Well, and that's in your wish list, I guess.
Yeah, well, what I try to do with my life is I want to invent the kind of work that I never want to retire from.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there's nothing more fun than writing books and talking about what matters to people and making movies about what matters.
And expressing as you grow. You're expressing something to help other people.
See, I have this theory, too, that if you don't reinvent your life constantly, the universe will do it for you. But oftentimes it does it in blunt ways. I think it's a good idea to reinvent your life consciously, every few years anyway.
I agree with you. Are you getting much feedback from your book?
Well, I'm getting the, delicious feedback. Getting a lot of emails from it. Getting tons of emails every day.
I can imagine people kind of gathering and supporting each other and going through it together.
Yes, and one of the things we have on the fivewishesbook.com website is a place where people can go and write in their wishes and then look and see what other people have written.
That's great.
It's kind of like a big chalkboard that people can write on, and a virtual chalkboard in the sky, and people can look at see what other people have written.
So it's kind of like I was going to say a blog, but I guess blogs usually aren't interactive. I actually wrote into it a while back, but yeah, I enjoyed that.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you did. Yeah, I'm getting, we've been on the bestseller list in Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and appeared on the New York Times bestseller list last week, so that's kind of good feedback for an author, too.
It's going like wildfire. Well, you know what it is? It's actually changing consciousness again, sort of like, it's opening people to the fact they can have the reality they want, huh?
Yeah, and I mean, what a great lesson. What a great message. Something I kind of wish I'd heard about when I was in the first grade or when I was in the 11th grade or even when I was in college. I didn't hear about that until I was in my 30s.
Maybe you're going to set up a child's book and get it into the schools.
Oh, wow, that's a great idea.
I think it's a brilliant idea, and actually, I think little kids would take to it like wildfire,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm going to let you write that one, okay?
What's your next book?
Right now, I don't have a next. I'm busy, taking five wishes out into the world, and I never know what I'm going to write about in advance. I'll probably a year from now, some idea will seize me. I think this was my 31st book, if I remember correctly.
Really?
And I'm pretty confident that somewhere along the line, something will grab hold of me and not let go.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, are you going to be doing a talk, a lecture, performance, or something, workshop over the next little while?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, I did one yesterday at a big church down here called the Center of the Heart.
Hmm.
And, I'm out and about quite a bit this year. I'm doing a big conference in L.A. on Sunday where I'll be taking a whole auditorium full of people through the Five Wishes process. So,
excellent. So if people want to know where you're showing up, where you're doing this kind of thing, where do they find the information?
They can go to my regular website, which is simply Hendricks.com, HENDRICKS.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there they can find out where all of our seminars and lectures and things like that are. My wife and I both do a lot of seminars and talks around the world. In fact, she's heading off to Santa Fe, I believe, tomorrow to do something, and then on down to New Orleans. And so she's always out and about doing her work as well as...
Does she speak of relation? What's her work
mm-hmm.
about?
Yeah. Yep. She teaches our seminars on relationships. We have a three-day, what we call our foundation seminar, which is teaches the basics of relationship and body-mind vibrance. And she does that all over Europe and Asia and Canada and the U.S. I go out with her sometimes and do those, but she does a lot of those herself.
Hmm.
She's more the teacher in the family. I'm a little bit more of a stay-at-home guy. I like to write and that kind of thing. But and I like to go out maybe once a week and do a lecture or seminar.
But you and she have got your first wish. You've made your first wish with Kathleen, right?
Yes, that wish came true, even 1,000 times more than I would have ever imagined. We've been together 28 years now. We just celebrated our 26th wedding anniversary last week.
Mm,
and so in every way, it's been the most incredible learning experience of my life. It's exhilarating. And
the doorways, the word commitment was your big doorway at that point.
Yeah, that really got the ball rolling and led to lots of magic and 26 years of feeling like the luckiest man on earth.
The magic of unfoldment. Well, I really appreciate your coming on the Paradigm Shifter show, and you certainly are a paradigm shifter. I recommend that everybody read the book, Five Wishes, and do the work. Join us in unfolding.
Well, thank you. Blessings to you, and I appreciate you helping get the word out into the world.
All right. Many blessings. Thanks, Gay.
Okay, bye.
Well, that was our Paradigm Shifter for this week. And next week's Paradigm Shifter, guess what? I don't have one yet because we had somebody, and for a number of reasons, she's had to postpone. So I'm going to surprise you with the Paradigm Shifter of next week. But isn't it wonderful what Gay's work is doing and how there's this kind of ripple of people waking up to creating their reality from a deeper place? I just found that there was so much subconscious material that came up and got turned around as he developed his story about the wishes. So check it out. You'll love it. This is Veronica Entwistle, and I've enjoyed talking to you on my Tuesday 4 to 6 shift. And we didn't have any callers on the first one, but maybe we had one caller, and maybe next week. And I'm going to be on Jackie Salvitti's ET Healing on Thursday night. And again, we're working with the shadow. And I'm not quite sure which part of the detail is, but, we'll just see what it is. It's always really interesting and in-depth as Jackie and her team work with what we use to create ourselves and our consciousness and how to shift what's in the shadow. The shadow, our shadows, our collective and individual shadows, very often dictates to us on a subconscious level what goes on between us and other people. And what we're trying to do on that show is really work our way through the understanding of the shadow and shift and release some of the deeper imprints that are holding us back from our loving fulfillment. Anyway, this is Veronica Entwistle saying goodbye. And, oh, I'm so glad Bob's here because he reminds me of things I forget to say. Tune into my website, veronicaentwistle.com. It's being changed. So tune into the website, find out what's going on, and then be prepared because the next few weeks I should have a very different website, and it's really quite exciting how it's being set up so that you'll be able to go into the website and listen to the radio show right through that. It's being created by a brilliant young designing gentleman, and I'm very excited to boast about it in a while. And remember, you can live a life of fulfillment. You can fulfill your life more and more as you set up conscious intention, as he calls them, conscious wishes, about what's missing and turn that around into an affirmative statement. But you need to have your intention clear and your intention strong. Read the book. You'll love it. Go into Five Wishes, the number 5wishesbook.com, and enjoy. Much love to all of you, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.